Todd, say hello and welcome. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker-Trombley at Seagatsoon. On today's show, I am honored to speak with Conrad Plews from Edmonton, Alberta. Welcome to the show, Conrad. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it so much.
So I have to ask, you know, first things first is, can you talk a little bit about your family roots within Anzac and Fort McMurray area, as well as along with some of your role models growing up within your hometown?
Yeah, for sure. My family, for the most part, hails from Anzac area, which is right near Fort McMurray. Like a lot of people in our communities, we lost our treaty status when my granny married my grandfather. So that is something I think a lot of us, you know, have dealt with. And I predominantly grew up in Edmonton in the city, so... I know growing up that was, you know, there was some separation there. I was raised by my granny for the most part. So, you know, I did get exposed to Cree and a lot of different things. So, that was something that I, as a young person, dealt with trying to get back to my roots, you know, because I didn't grow up in Anzac or in the Fort McMurray area. You know, a big influence for me from our community is my aunt Tantu Cardinal. I think most people know who she is, probably the most recognizable Indigenous woman maybe in the world. It's hard to say, you know. I know she just got the Walk of Fame, and it's funny because she actually was just with us, staying with me this week, and I drove her to the airport yesterday, and I didn't even know it was happening yesterday. So it was kind of a funny conversation because I'd heard about it happening, but she was like, oh, that's today. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's amazing. So cool. But she's been a huge influence on me as a as someone who's also an artist. You know, she's an actress and an activist. So she, you know, she's always been someone who's went after her dreams her whole life and has been an amazing representation for Indigenous people and, you know, and for women. So she, you know, has always been there as a role model for me and for a lot of people, I think. So...
How old were you when you discovered that you were going to be going into the world of artistry? That what at what age did you know this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life?
I think my whole life I felt that I was going to pursue art in some form. I think I was drawing before I could walk. I know my mom has kept pictures of things I've drawn since before I could remember. And that's been a part of my journey my whole life, even when I was... graduating high school, I knew that I would likely be going to art school, even though it didn't happen till I was in my mid-20s. That was the direction I wanted to go in. And I've had, you know, besides, you know, most, you know, a lot of artistic influences, I was a huge comic book nerd, and that influenced me. And I thought maybe illustration or comic books was the direction I was going to go. I just wasn't sure yet. But then I landed on tattooing, and that's what I've done for almost 20 years now.
How does it feel that you, when take us back to the day that you opened up your first tattoo shop here within the city of Edmonton?
Well, you know, we opened our first location in 2008, and, you know, it was a struggle, I have to admit. I had a business partner, and him and I had spent nearly a year trying to get it off the ground, and we were at the point where we almost gave up. We were like, I think this isn't going to happen. We couldn't find a location that was working for us. Between the two of us, admittedly, we didn't have a lot of funds. We just had our own savings, and we were just working away tattooing to try to get the money together to do it. And finally, we came across a place that worked super well for us, and we're still in that same location. And initially, I think we were so working so hard to get it done, it didn't even seem real. And for the first few years, just like any business, you really struggle. And we were just month to month happy, like, yeah, we've got another month under our belts. We're in there for a little longer. And that's how we did it for the beginning until we started to grow. And, you know, and then it, you know, over time we got better at what we were doing. And, I'm still learning every day. I don't consider myself a master business person by any means, but I do love tattoos, and I love the artists that work for us, so that's what drives me.
And of course, you know, take me back to like when you did your first ever tattoo. Were you nervous? Who taught you how to tattoo people? Because I know like with tattooing, you got a lot of different canvases to work with, whether it be on the arms, the legs, a certain part of the body. Take us back to when you first did your very first tattoo.
Oh yeah, I actually, it was a good friend of mine, Stephanie Mans, and she's a Métis woman actually too. She allowed me to tattoo her foot with this little design that she made. And, you know, with my inexperience, I really probably shouldn't have tattooed a foot for my first tattoo. But she was tough, man, and she let me do it because that's a hard spot to get tattooed. So that, you know, I'll never forget that. And then after that, the second tattoo I ever did, I did on myself, which I think is a great learning thing for, because if you're going to be doing this to people, I feel like maybe you should try it on yourself, see what, you know, see what it's all about. And but after I did that one on myself, I that's when I realized, yeah, I can do this, and it I've never looked back.
And of course, you know, if a lot of people don't know of your style of work, what's the style you like to lean towards the most when it comes to tattooing?
You know, I always pride myself on being a pretty well-rounded artist. I can tackle just about anything. What I think a lot of people come to me for, though, is I do a lot of black and gray realism. I do like to try to do some stuff that would be considered kind of indigenous art, I guess. So I have a collection of that kind of art that some people get from me. But what I think I like the most about my career in tattooing is that every day is different. I'm not doing the same thing every day, because I think I would maybe get tired after a while if I was only working within one genre of tattooing all the time. And that's what I really enjoy about it, is every day is a surprise.
And of course, you know, hopefully we get to see our very own, you know, Ink Master Canada. Maybe we can see you as a judge as well for Ink Master.
I used to watch that show quite a bit, and a lot of people would say, man, you should be on that show. I think you'd do all right. And yeah, I legitimately thought about it as something that I would have liked to try, or at least some format like that. I looked at it as being maybe something that'd be pretty fun, actually. Who knows? If there's a Canada version, I'd be up for that for sure.
It has to happen, honestly. Like, I'm surprised that hasn't happened, because, you know, we got Beaver's Den. We got a lot of shows from America coming into Canada, you know, like Shark Tank. That's like it's like the Bears Cave or whatever it is called that APTN did. APTN should get behind on like their own tattoo, you know, because there must be a lot of other indigenous tattoo artists out there. But I have to ask you as well, speaking of the tattoos, when you got the phone call from the Edmonton Elks organization about saying, hey, Conrad, we want you to come up with a concept about designing the Edmonton Elks logo, what came to mind? And of course, how did that all go about? Take us back to that very moment.
Yeah, you know, when it came to be, it almost didn't seem real at first. I knew that it would be a huge opportunity. Maybe I didn't even realize I just thought it'd be cool to make something for, you know, the Edmonton Elks, which is because I am a football fan. But I didn't realize how far reaching it would be for me and the opportunities that it would give me outside of that. So it happened really fast. So I didn't get a lot of time to really ponder that. I was just focused on coming up with a couple cool designs for them, and trying to do something that I knew that I would love, right? Because that's, I think as from tattooing, if I'm not doing something I love, I don't really want to, you know, I don't think it's fair to the client. I try to put that same philosophy towards what I was doing for them. I wanted something that I would love to see and wear. And, you know, I'm going to be getting a lot more of that merchandise to wear myself. But, you know, so I think in a way it was a blessing that it did happen so fast, because I might've got a little bit intimidated by the scope of what was happening. And I guess I'm just find myself really, really blessed and really lucky that this opportunity came my way, and that I ran with it like I did.
And how did Edmonton Elks like discover you? Like, how did they come about to approaching you? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? Like, or was there like other artists that you had to compete against for a concept idea for the Elks logo?
No. I know they had some things in the work. They wanted to do an indigenous thing, and my name was given to them as a prospective artist, indigenous artist in Edmonton. And I think from when my meeting with them was, is that they had a few boxes they wanted to check. They wanted, of course, an indigenous artist, but they wanted someone who hailed from Edmonton, who called Edmonton their home. Someone, you know, and because I was a longtime business person in town, You know, our shop tries to give back, so we're very community involved, doing fundraisers and different, and being involved with just wherever we can. I think that's kind of the person they wanted to, you know, because they knew that it would be, you know, and I know now that it's given me opportunity to speak with people like you and a lot of people. So they wanted, I think, someone who was willing to do that. Not every artist wants to talk to everybody. And luckily I do. So I don't mind that at all.
And the cool thing about, you know, the design of the logo is that there's a meaning behind it and also an inspiration. Can you talk about that?
Yes. One of the things that they talked to me about are sort of like parameters that they had hoped would be involved with the new design I did. They had I don't know if it was exactly a contest, but there was a young man named Isaiah. I'm going to screw up his last name. I think Masuskapo. And his family hails from Saskatchewan. He lives in Edmonton. And he created a version of the logo as well, an Indigenous-inspired one. And they used it for an orange shirt event. And he did that a couple years ago. So he was only in junior high at the time. So he's luckily I've been able to befriend him. And so they wanted, you know, some inspiration from that. So I did try to take as much as I could from that original design. I also wanted something that was still recognizable as the Elks. I didn't want, you know, I kept the color scheme the same. I liked the green and gold, so that wasn't a hard question or choice for me. And but I also wanted something that was distinctly, like when you looked at it, you knew there was an Indigenous inspiration. I didn't want to just, I borrowed from a lot of my Indigenous art inspirations. So that I could give it that, you know, that feel that you knew what it was, as well as I wanted to try to infuse a lot of movement, try to make it dynamic. That was my goal, to, you know, make it seem powerful and just really cool. I wanted it to be cool. So that was, you know, I also wanted it to be something that spoke to not just Indigenous people, but to Edmontonians in general or just sports fans. You know, I kind of just like wearing a tattoo, and admittedly I got the tattoo before the game even, because since the design was released, I've had many people like, man, I want that tattoo, I'm love it, you know, for various reasons. But I told myself I have to be the first one to get this tattoo. So my business partner did the tattoo, and he's a huge football fan too, and so he did the tattoo on me just about 2 weeks ago now.
And I remember walking up the stairs with you in Commonwealth Stadium, you know, as we were getting ready to do a little interview there, fresh off the Titantron presentation that you put together with the Edmonton Elks organization. And I just remember seeing you smile from ear to ear as, like, both women, men, and children would ask you to sign the T-shirts with your logo that you designed on the shirt. How did that feel?
Oh, that was a trip. You know, of course, I love the outpouring of positive energy that's come. People have responded so well to it, on Indigenous or non-Indigenous. Everyone seems to just be really taken with the new design. And I, you know, I couldn't be happier. That's what you want. You know, as an artist, you want people to respond well to it. And that's been overwhelming. That's been one of the coolest things for, you know, that I maybe in my life to see something like that come to fruition. It's been, you know, an amazing experience.
That was Conrad Plews from Edmonton, Alberta. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, I sit down and chat with Robbie Daniels from Stoney Nakoda First Nation. Robbie, I have to ask, can you talk a little bit about growing up on Stoney Nakoda First Nation?
My father is from Eden Valley, and my mom is from Morley, and I've only grown up in Eden Valley for like 2 years, since I was two, and then the rest, my mom took us to Morley, and where I grew up, going to school in Exshaw, going up until junior high, and then I moved to Calgary, and when I was like 13 years old. And went to a school in Bowness, and eventually went to Soutina after that, Soutina Junior Senior High. And I'm the youngest of three. I have an older sister that she passed away last year, and I have an older brother. And my mom raised us. She was a single parent, and of course my dad was an alcoholic, and and my mom left him. This is the reason why we moved back to Morley. And and my mom, you know, she's my rock, she's my everything, you know. She raised us with nothing but love, and raised us good, as best she can. But as soon as we moved to the city, you know my mom, city life really got a hold of me. Not it didn't even take long, you know. I started to get involved with these, these urban Indians, you know, and got into drugs, alcohol, and then started into getting into mischief, you know. Started small as, breaking, carpooling and stuff like that, stealing bikes. And eventually I ended up having a criminal record when I was 13. So from then I was in and out of jail, up until, into my adult years. Then I went into the adult criminal system, and in there too, in and out. And that's how, until right up till I was 35, and going in and out of jail, addiction, since I was 13. I've always despised, I've always said, that I'm not going to do crystal meth, because I've heard of it when I was young. And when I didn't even used to use crystal meth, I heard about it and how they were, made with battery acid and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going to use that, but ended up really getting into and getting addicted to it. And, it caused me a lot of, pain, suffering, struggling, and also mental health issues, and because, that really got me into, my mom passed away in 2016, and I and my family really, my family really took it hard, and before she passed away, she was really trying hard, taking me to ceremonies up north, trying to get help from me for my addiction. I remember her, always crying for me, I was so dependent over my mom, I'm over 30 years old, I was really dependent. She paid for everything, she paid for food, paid her rent, that's how she was, showed her love. And, by the time she passed away, I couldn't even take care of myself. So I went deeper on the streets. I went deeper into the drugs, and eventually, I was losing my mind, and psychosis really hit me, I was really struggling with psychosis, because that drug really, crystal meth, it kept me up for 14 days, 2 weeks at a time. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but is it okay?
Yeah, go for it, brother.
Yeah. It kept me up for 2 weeks at a time, and I would sleep for an hour. Then I stayed for another 2 weeks. That went on, for a whole year. I think I only slept about 2 weeks or something, or a week. And then that caused me to have mental health issues. It's starting to hear voices, psychosis, and paranoia, and all that stuff. Thinking people were after me, thinking people are going to kill me, and stuff like that. And it got really bad, so I checked my, the last time I checked myself into detox, alpha house detox, I really took advantage of the cultural stuff that was in there. Because growing up, I didn't know nothing about my culture. The only thing my mom taught me was to speak my language, and I speak my Nakota language fluently. But I was brought up to learn about Jesus and the Christianity. I didn't know nothing about my culture. But when I got into the detox, I really got into the smudge. First thing was the smudge, smudging. And then they offered 2 sweat lodges a week at that time. And I really took advantage of that. Also, variety. And by the time I went to a treatment, then I came back. And then I went to Calgary Dream Center. And then from there, I started to, go to AA meetings regularly, Monday to Sunday. I had the routine. And going to meetings with my friends, I met that are also in recovery. And that's how Sober Crew was, little did I know it was being formed. And, we kept going to meetings as a group and stuff like that. And eventually, I took a workshop to make a drum. Offered by Pikachu, I think, closer to home with Darcy and Frank Turner Rope. And then they, they had men's circle there, drumming and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed that because, sitting there with men, testosterone, But that's when I got passion of, singing, it really made me feel so good. I didn't know how to sing all my life. I didn't know nothing about my culture, but I started to sing. And then I made a drum and I started to walk around everywhere, downtown. I started singing, by the river and then in the streets. I started singing for the homeless people. And then eventually, my friends, wanted to do that. And then, the songs that I learned, I taught them, and then we learned, and then we learned well enough to go to the, these places, the homeless shelters to go sing, stuff like that. And then I mentioned, let's do something more, and then we were looking for a grant. That time, my friend Bobby Taddy, he found a grant, a small grant, and we got approved for a grant, and we started our own outreach team back then, and bought some cards, food, and stuff like that, and that's when our outreach started. And there's other outreach teams in the city, but what's different about ours is we bring out the drums, and we bring out life experience, and we sit there and talk to them, just kicking the shit like friends, because these people, I used to be on the street with them, man. So was, my friends and stuff like that. And so we have this connection with them. And then, it made a big impact because I remember the first time I started to go smudge these people, the impact I got was really powerful, and the people were crying and it was really powerful. So eventually, I was doing this every day. I felt like one day I felt like going, I was like following my heart. I felt really strong urge to pick up my drum and my smudge. And I was like, the sun was rising, and then go downtown and then go smudge the homeless people. So I did that. I did that every day for a few weeks, and then I got a phone call from the Alpha House outreach team, and they asked me if I could come in for a meeting. So I went for a meeting, and then they asked me, we've noticed what you're doing, but wanted to see if we wanted to offer you a job for doing just what you're doing. It's your own program. Said what? I was really overwhelmed. The next day, I was already on payroll, and it's been just over 3 years ago since I worked there. And So we've got invited places to speak on behalf about addiction, you know, and because that's, you know, we're all recovering addicts, and you know, and we try to give hope with the experience, you know, our life experience, and also bring our drama.
Can you talk about the importance, of course, you know, behind some of the members that are with you? You touched a little bit about it. You know, your brother is also with you, and also Crystal Fontaine. Can you share a little bit about their stories?
Well, my brother, you know, we're, like I said, me and when my mom passed away, we were all broken, and we took it all. We all went on the street, and, you know, and we were struggling with addiction. And sadly, my sister, you know, she died from an overdose. And but my brother was also, you know, he was struggling with addiction. And when, you know, I started to sober up first, you know, and my, you know, my family. And then, you know, I tried to tell them, you know, come on, sober up. You know, I tried, but it wasn't doing nothing. So by my actions, I just kept doing what I was doing, you know, going, you know, helping people as much as I can. And, you know, and then with my action, my brother, you know, was influenced to stay sober. And he ended up started to get on the wagon and walk a spiritual path. And attend ceremonies with me. He'll ask me, when's the next sweat? Because I've always, you know, tried to go to ceremonies, something like that. And even my niece was on the street too. And I took them to sweats, and they really enjoyed it. Because, you know, the sweat is like, you know, when I used to chase my high, but, you know, the sweat, you know, inside of it, the way it makes you feel, right? Like, it makes you feel so good. So that's my high, I chase, eh? So, but anyway, my brother started to sober up, and then he got into drumming and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not the best singer, but I like to drum. And they, you know, we're all beginners in drumming. We all learn at the same time. He would come to, we have two drum circles a week on Wednesdays and Sundays. He would come to that. We'd go to outreach, and the stuff, you know, that Sober Crew offered, he was there. And then that helped my niece and my brother, you know, just the ceremonies we go to, and that helped my brother. And he's been in recovery. He just passed the 2-year mark. And he was living with me now, but now he's moved on, got his own place. And my aunt, Crystal Fontaine, she's an amazing person, you know. She's really humble and nice, you know. She's from up north somewhere. But, I met her a few years ago, and she just came out at Sunrise, and she started to come to our drum sessions. And after that, even her, she didn't even know how to sing. But once a few months later, she started singing with the, you know, women. You know, every time we go out to go through stuff, when we get invited to go places, she'd be there. And you know, it helped her. You know, it made the singing, because, you know, if you see the logo on Sober Crew thing, the drum is in the middle there. And then the drum is a big part of, you know, our recovery and the culture and stuff. But yeah, and yeah, they're both amazing people.
That was Robbie Daniels from Stony Nakota First Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Conrad Plews and Robbie Daniels. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.